welcome to Bullpen Session. This is Patrick Lillis. Glad you're here. Glad you're listening. Glad to be back. We are doing season 5 of the Bullpen Session. And, happy to have taken a break and get back. You know, it's fall of 2023. I feel like things are back into an active swing. It feels like people are busy and fully engaged in whatever ways that we are newly engaged post-pandemic. But I mention it because it feels like we're active. We're doing things. A lot of people are busy, which is good. And thrilled today to share with you the conversation I have with my friend Erin Mallon, who is playwright. She narrates audiobooks. She has written audio plays, has self-produced her own audio recordings of her plays and novels. And I just find it amazing at all that she does. She also has a new podcast out called My Job is to Play, which you should check out. And we'll talk about that as well. And she's just amazing at getting a lot of things done. And, you know, in the conversation, we talked about challenges or the inevitables, as we titled it. You'll hear us say that in the conversation. But she's willing to face on, you know, things she didn't know how to do, like how do I publish a book? How do I deal with this? How do I create this event? And I think where we are today, you know, I think that is what we have to do. I think it is a lot of, especially early on, but long-term, a lot of self-producing and creating your own opportunities and not letting small things like I haven't done it before to stop you from doing it. And Erin is a great model of that. And she also cultivates a very large community, and we talk about how she does that as well. And I think that is vitally important now, is that we each, you know, I think it's always been important that we build a community, but I think as we develop ourselves artistically and our artistic career, it's maintaining that personal relationship with the community, especially one that maybe we don't see in person as often as we used to or haven't seen in person because people have moved away over the last couple of years. So it's a great conversation, and I am thrilled to be back. And with that, play ball.
So it goes way back to when I was 5 years old. I was on, I was playing in my backyard, and I was on my swing set with my brothers. And I had this weird little kid epiphany where I could tell that my dad didn't love his job and my mom was doing a great job taking care of us, but I could tell it was hard. And for whatever reason, that day, it dropped into my brain that right now, as a 5-year-old kid, my job is to play. And I remember like pumping my legs a little harder on the swing set that day and just like really playing. But I think I got it a little wrong too, because in my mind back then, it was a limited time offer that I only had this job as a playful person for X amount of years. And then I had to get serious and do something I didn't like. And then I learned as I got older and I got into theater and I played the piano and I did all these things. I saw people having creative careers that brought them joy. Not that there wasn't ever any struggle, but it brought them joy. And I realized that I wanted that too. And so for the past couple of years, I've been wanting to put together my work as someone in the audio sphere and someone who loves talking to people and the theater that I do. And I wanted to put it all together and just talk to people on a weekly basis about how they keep play in the forefront of their life. So I'm talking to theater artists, musicians, designers. I spoke to a psychic medium last week because it's all about, for me, creative flow. How connected are you moment to moment with creativity and flow? And so that's what we're talking about on the podcast.
That's amazing. And I'm glad you realized that it's still your job to play.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it is your job. From my outside opinion or view or observation, it seems that you are working at your job all the time. And
that's accurate. That's accurate.
Is, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, when you decided to launch the podcast, one of the reasons I want to talk to you all the time when we did this live in person, you were a first guest.
I was so honored. Yeah. I remember that.
And then it was like, oh, let's talk about being multi-disciplinary,
hyphenated,
all the things you do. But now I'm really interested in the launch of the pod and all of your self-producing of audio plays and self-publishing. The one thing it feels like that you've done really well is build an audience, build a community.
Thank you.
And I, knowing for somebody who, running the farm and like knowing how challenging that is,
Yeah.
want to ask how you go about doing that. And when did you recognize you had a community?
Yeah. So I've been an audiobook narrator since 2000. I'd say like 2013 was when I could really say that I had a career going for myself. So it's been about 10 years. And I primarily narrate romance audiobooks. And that community is voracious. If you love romance books and if you love romance audiobooks, we're getting even nichier. These people, these wonderful, amazing, passionate people, are listening to five, six, seven books a week. They are devouring stories and they really go to bat for the authors that they love, the narrators that they love, and they make noise. They make noise for the people that they want to hear more from, and they support the people that they love. And so once I was at that for a couple years, I started to notice this supportive group kind of forming, and just started to really interact with them, try to provide things for them that they would enjoy. And so it took me quite a long while until I started blending my worlds because they were kind of st two starkly different worlds. Everyone in my life that cared about romance audiobooks really didn't care about my theater. And people that cared about the work that I was creating in the theater, they're like, what the hell is a romance audiobook? So it felt like I was doing two very different things at once. But then, you hear this so often, the pandemic happened and things started to shift where I realized I have this whole wonderful group of people that's supportive of my work. They were asking me, when are you going to write a romance book? When are you going to write a romantic comedy book? You write all these comedic plays, you narrate all this romance. When are you going to stick it together? And my answer at the time was, I'm not. And I don't exactly know why that was my impulse. I don't know. Sometimes the idea of like genre fiction makes me feel a little hemmed in, like I have to do things in a certain way because it's commercial fiction. It's people
They're
have
real.
expect. Yeah, they there are certain like a romance book must have a happy ending or it is not a romance book. And I like the freedom that theater gives me to do whatever the hell I want. And then when we're in the room, we realize we have some stipulations. But so I resisted it. And then in 2020, I wrote my first romance book. And it went well, and I realized that I'd started a series, so I wrote the second book and the third book and the fourth book. And during that time, what I also started to do was, well, why don't I adapt my stage plays, which can't be on stage right now, in this audio world? Because I'm producing audio for all these different authors all the time. Why aren't I doing it for myself as well? So I narrated my own books. I got together my friends via Zoom, and we all amazing narrators who also have followings, and started recording my plays and putting them out there. And the really cool side effect was all these listeners, these readers who over and over they'd say to me, I thought I didn't like theater, but I like this. And my response is, thank you. And I bet you really do like theater. You've just had some experiences that didn't feel like it was for you, or you didn't feel welcome. If you like someone's sensibility as a writer, you're probably going to like what they do in various mediums. So I don't know. Life started to get really more fun back then when I started to blend what I was doing and put it out in different channels.
When re you reached out to that community to let them know you were doing it, right? Because they're,
Yeah.
when you say they make noise, I'm imagining that's on social media, Twitter, whatever, X, all that. Is that how you, and because I know there's, I get the Erin Mallon newsletter.
Oh, thank you.
But I, capturing all that data is hard, right? Is one, but important. But also to reach an expansive audience, is that how you're connecting with them through social just to say, hey, I'm releasing a play or whatever.
Yes, but also it's also social media, but like I have a readers group on Facebook. And it's not huge. It has maybe 1,000 people in it, which is nice, but it's not massive. But they're all people that are very supportive of my work. So in that group, they always get the sneak peeks of my new covers. They know when I have a play going on somewhere. They get early listens. There's people that are on my review team. So they know if they get a free copy of my latest thing, they'll put up an honest review somewhere for me, stuff like that. So, yeah. And then I have my newsletter, which is a lot of the same people, but also different. In some circles, they call it like your street team, the people that'll go out and just kind of spread the word for you. So I've been trying to get smarter about utilizing that. And also trying to create events that people want to create, they want to expand their community. So a good example of that is I have this play called These Walls Can Talk. And it was a play that I wrote about the romance audiobook community because I was out for drinks with some friends a couple years ago and they were asking how writing was going. I was telling them different things that I was working on, different plays, and they were, friends and generally supportive. But then they said, how's the audiobook thing going? Because that's kind of foreign to them. So I just started telling them, oh, this about my pseudonym, this fake name that I have, and this about this community and my co-narrator and this sex scene and that thing. And one of them said, why aren't you writing about this? They're like, I want to know about this. I said, really? Because you don't know what's interesting about you usually. Your life is your life. And so I wrote that play. And it was just this lovely response because I put it into audio. I had some of the best romance audiobook narrators out there play the roles. So we're like poking fun at ourselves. We're poking fun at the community. We're celebrating the community because romance can really get, it can get dogged. People think it's, there's something less than about romance, which I could go on and on about. And so what we did, I hope, and we tried to do is just really elevate it and show, no, we're proud of this and this is exciting. We're telling stories about love every day. Like there's nothing wrong with that. And the response is really amazing. So I wrote part two and part three. And then last year we went to Vegas and we did a whole marathon, all three plays. So it was like an 8.5 hour day marathon of all three plays. We did it at Planet Hollywood in Las Vegas. And we had over 100 people in the audience just like losing their minds because they were romance audiobook fans. They saw themselves on stage and it was just this lovely day of celebration. So I'm always trying to spot ways that I can provide community events like that to celebrate what we love doing.
I have to ask, how'd you book Planet Hollywood? How'd
I
you come out?
sold tickets and I shelled out a lot of cash. But yeah, I called Planet Hollywood and I told them what I was hoping to do. And they showed me the different rooms that I could do. What I did was I paired that event. I was already going out there for a book event and I knew lots of other people would be there for that same book event. So I created a different event the day after that one closed and said, hey, if you're coming out here already for this, this is what we're doing the following day. So I kind of That's how I operated. And a lot of people stuck around and changed their flights and joined us. So it worked out nicely.
And when you started producing the audio, your own material, the books are self-published, right?
Most of them, yeah.
Which one is not, or were they initially self-published and then somebody else published? I mean, I know your plays are published, like, or.
Yeah. The books that I've written, the four books are self-published, yes. And then some of my plays I also self-published because I was already producing the audio and I wanted people to be able to have like a nice pretty copy. But then things would happen where I'd get a publisher that wanted to publish the play, so then I pull it down and now it's officially published with them. So I've been
And that
kind of
was,
flexible.
and what did what what inspired them to want to publish it? Because they heard the audio, or did they already hear it and they're like, we'd like to have that? I'm just wondering how the awareness came about, because.
With two of the plays, yes, they were already in audio, but the way they found those two plays was through NPX. There was a day where I'm in this playwrights group for parents, and it's really cool. Everyone in the group, so many of them have been through Juilliard, they all have kids. So we can talk about work and we talk about parenting, and they highlighted us one day. So we were on the homepage And two of my plays got picked up from that, which is really nice.
Oh, that's great. What I think is great is the self-generating of work. And I'm wondering where the knowledge of that come from, or the impetus, because I know, speaking of self-generating, you created a group early on, Brooklyn Generator, and which was supporting the development of plays similar to, you know, and I'm curious. Yeah, at what point did you become aware, like, hey, I can make the, I don't need to wait. And I think that's the reason I think it's also really inspirational is not only because, as people like to say, since the pandemic, I think there's been a major shift in how theater and creative people build a career as they're building one now. And I think it is more independent reliant. And I think it's, I think you, there are some people who are, can do the institutional route, but I think a lot of it is building a relationship with an audience.
Yeah.
And more so than I've seen in a long time.
Well, I started out as an actor, and it took me a while to allow myself to truly pivot. I had this desire to write, and I'll be completely honest. Back in the day when I was had like blinders on, where all I could see was acting. It's all I cared about. Nothing wrong with that, but I wouldn't let myself try other things in the arts that excited me, because this was the thing. And this, I'm not proud of this, but when I would hear of an actor who was now directing or was now writing, part of me felt sad. Part of me felt like, no, because in my mind, acting was it. That was it. And it felt, I was wrong. I was dead wrong that they were giving up on something. But now in hindsight, I realized they were finding a path that was more in line with their heart, with what works for them. So I held on for dear life to acting and didn't let myself explore until much later than I could have or should have. No regrets. But so once I started writing, I guess, you know, they say, don't wait for someone to knight you. You have to knight yourself. Knight's a very fancy word for what we're talking about. But I needed to call myself a writer. And in order to do that, I needed to give myself lots of practice to do it. And so when I first started the Brooklyn Generator, it was a 10-minute play project. We would get together in my apartment in Brooklyn, hence the Brooklyn Generator, and I would have like food and drinks. I would bring in 6 writers and 12 actors. I'd have a theme. So like right now it's October, we're talking. I remember one October we did the creature feature plays. And so I'd have the name of like a horror movie, and we put it into the hat, and each of the 6 writers would pick a horror movie out of the hat. They pick two actors' names out of another hat. Then they'd write a 10-minute play. We met Friday. They'd write the 10-minute play on Saturday. On Sunday, we got together at the Brooklyn Winery in Williamsburg, and we performed all 6 plays for an audience. And it was great. We did this for 2 years. I wrote so many 10-minute plays. I just really learned that medium. And then I was like, well, so my decisions back then were about building community, but they were also about giving myself a platform to learn, to be surrounded by great people that I was handpicking. Like I would just see someone and be like, I love their play. I'll ask them if they want to be part of this. And oftentimes they said yes. And so after 2 years, I was like, well, I've gotten good at this 10-minute play thing. I need to get really good at full lengths now. So that's when I brought in my buddy Bixby Elliott, and we adapted the whole model for full length plays. So now instead of every month we would meet and write a 10-minute play in a weekend, each month was devoted to a specific playwright. We'd be a cohort of 6 writers. We come together, and then each month we'd have a generator party for that particular person. They would bring in their actors, a theme of some sort. We'd have like a salon, basically, and they'd ask all kinds of questions. And then they go away for 30 days, write a full-length play. And then we went to the Tank in Manhattan, and then we performed a reading of that play at the end of the month. And we did that for a couple of years. So every year I was writing 2 full-length plays because I set myself up to do that and was creating community at the same time. So it really worked well for a long time.
How did you go from Brooklyn Generator And I don't know, it's very funny. I know I've seen your plays. I don't know if Branched is the first play I saw or not.
That's the first play I ever wrote, so yeah.
But then yes.
Yeah.
Is that I know you joined the theater, you know, you were a member of Inviolate. I don't know if you were already a member when they produced your play or if that's when
Yeah,
you
I was. Yeah.
remember. But at that point, somebody's considering you, you know, not only are you creating this community, but and did you, but other people are going, oh, Aaron's a writer.
Yeah, and that's when things got really interesting because I would meet people who would say, "Oh, I didn't know you were an actor," because they'd met me as a writer. I was like, "Wow, the world has turned on its head." Like it was funny when that started to shift. But you brought up Branched. That was a big turning point for me in my mentality about how I wanted to move forward, because I remember sitting in that audience watching people watch the play. And that was my first experience having a full-length play of mine produced. And I was really proud of the work and I was really excited by the process. And I realized sitting in the audience, no one looking at me, no one knowing I was the one that wrote it, I didn't care. I was blissed out. Like, and I never thought the feeling of being on stage would be usurped, that's a fancy word, by sitting in the dark in the back. I was happier there and I was surprised. And I'm like, I want more of this. It just felt like I remember one time I said to someone, and I think I phrased it wrong, and I had to explain myself. I said that I personally feel more well used as a writer than I do as an actor. And I think what she heard me say was that writers are a more vital part of the process or something. And that's not at all what I meant. I meant for me personally, I feel like the most of myself is being called to work when I'm writing. When I'm an actor, I can hide a little bit. I can. I don't know about other actors, but when I'm writing, I can't. Like, I can't hide. And it feels like what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah, and there's something about the writing, you can bring all of yourself to it too. You can
Yeah.
bring the, as you listed out, the community of romance novels, like you can make fun of yourself, you can make fun of the world, but you can also celebrate and honor it. You can have
Yeah.
depth and quirkiness and
Well, and you know, I'm as we get older, we just keep finding all these layers and figuring out who the heck we are and why we do what we do. I have a real tendency to, I'm working on it, but like people please. I'm very conscious of people's emotions around me, and I always want to make sure people are okay. And I often take on like responsibility for that, which is an impossible task. So when as an actor, I think it was very easy to, because you are in service of the play. You are working for someone's created something and you're trying to bring it forward using your own vision and your own skills, but it's in service of that. And I would want to make sure they were okay, make sure they were happy, the playwright was happy, the director was happy. And I think that wasn't always the best situation for me. When I'm a writer, I don't know. You can do or not do my play, and that's okay. But it's me and the words and my connection to source, to creativity, whatever you want to call it. And I'm either listening to it or I'm squelching it. And I know whether I'm doing one or the other. So, yeah, I can't people please when I'm writing, which is good for me.
since you've narrated over 600 audiobooks,
Yeah.
I had to think if I've read 600 books.
You probably have.
I'm going to count plays and know that I have. But how did that start? How did you, and because doing it a lot, sure, becoming better at it and good at it and being recommended and that's,
Yeah.
but how did the intro to that as a career, because they don't talk a lot about that when you're studying acting. They don't say
Right.
this is
And
an
my friends
option.
and I, my narrator friends and I joke a lot because always say, like, if we're at a party and we talk about the various things that we do, people always stop when you say you're an audiobook narrator. That's the thing they want to talk about. And I think it's just because they don't run into people that often that have that job. So it's interesting to people. I really pursued it intentionally. When I got out of school and I was auditioning for lots of plays, and I did a lot of downtown theater, and I was always in like workshops of plays. Like, I loved being in on the ground floor and learning about things. I didn't realize at the time I was studying how to be a playwright, but I was. And I was working as a yoga teacher. I had worked in restaurants, and I was like, I'm done. I don't want to be so far away from the thing that I want. Like, I want to be telling stories all day, however I can do it. And at the time, I was a woman that was in my yoga class. She was working as an audiobook narrator, and we developed a barter where she would put me behind her microphone and give me like some tips, and I would give her yoga sessions. And she opened the door for me to get my first audiobook audition at Audible. And then once you get a couple books, then things start moving in a different way. So I always thank her and credit her for, you always need someone to open the door, right? You need to be ready. You need to be able to deliver when you get there, but someone opening that door for you is very, very helpful. And she did that for me.
And she introduced you to them, and it's I imagine Audible's auditioning through Audible and not necessarily a casting agent that's outside,
Right.
like acting job. But she did it after, like you said, putting you behind her microphone for a little while and you
Yeah.
practicing and learning, and because it is a skill.
Yeah, and she wanted when she said, I recommend this person, me, that I wasn't going to embarrass her. So, yeah.
Yeah, this is not a question that maybe on the pod thought about the podcast, but for me, I'm thinking, got to take and how long? I'm not how long does it take to record a book, but it's got to take endurance.
Patrick, yes. And this is what people don't understand. I never want to sound like we're doing rocket science over here or anything like that. But people really don't understand what it takes on a daily basis because they'll say, oh, I've always been told I have a nice voice. I'm like, well, that's great. That's kind of like my voice. There's nothing particularly special about it. You don't need a wonderful voice. You need a voice that you could listen to for 10 hours and not grow weary of it, basically. And you need a flexible voice, and you need, and then you get into all the character stuff. Like, can you tell a story? Can you do the dialects? Can you switch from a male voice to a female voice? Can you differentiate five male voices in the same room when you're a female? Like, there's a lot of stuff. And then there's the physicality of it. You see me in my booth here. I spend 4 to 6 hours a day in this little booth, having to be very, very still because these microphones are incredibly sensitive. So there's like your posture, your breath. If I have a noisy breath, like right now I'm getting over this laryngitis. Can you imagine what that did to my work schedule? Somehow in a decade, I never got laryngitis, and then I got it, and buddy, I don't want to get it again. So it's a lot more endurance than people realize. And it's knowing your body, your breath, what you eat affects how you work. Certain people, like, they can't have any dairy. It's a lot.
Yeah, because I think the myth is, sort of like people who watch acting, they're like, oh, I'm personable, I could do that, it's
Right.
work. And I think the thing about the audio is audio books is like, I have a nice voice. And I think, yeah, but if I'm listening for 10 hours, that means you
Yes.
engaged in the story for at least 10 hours
Yeah.
at minimum. And sustaining all that and listen, the rest of us get to read and start to doze off, like that's part of
Yeah.
the joy of reading a little too long,
Right. Well, it's
and
funny you bring that up because you hear so often people say, I go to sleep with you every night. And I'm like, really? And they're like, yeah, like you're putting me to sleep every night. I'm like, is that good? But I think what they get a familiarity with a certain storyteller, and then there's you, it's intimate. It's very intimate. And I don't mean that in a creepy way. It's just like they feel like they really know you, because you're whispering in their ear for hours and hours and hours of their life. So I think that's probably why a community was built, in a different way and in a gentle, easy, steady way, because I'm talking to so many people all the time. And that's the joy, I think, of a podcast too, this long form conversation. You're what I want my podcast to feel like, that, like exactly what we're doing now, that someone is dropping in and they're part of this conversation with two professional people that are just talking about how to make work. I love
yeah.
it.
And I love, it's also something that's different about, I'm thinking about theater in the next phase of like developing early career artists and like what's necessary. And I think my vision right now is creating production opportunities that are in intimate settings. And I think when I'm thinking about that, because I think putting up a, not that these aren't incredibly important, but putting up a play at the Cherry Lane that runs for 3 weeks and whatever is, it's important and vital and all that's great. But I also think I'm not sure the audience is fully back. And I think I want to redefine that relationship. And when you were talking about the audiobook of being in your ear, I'm like, right, that intimacy I want.
Yeah.
So they build a relationship with the artist. But the other side of that is, the thing that's great about the recorded is you went, all these people are listening, right? People you don't know are listening.
Yeah.
And they can find it accidentally and build a relationship with you. And they didn't have to, you know, they didn't have to be in town those 3 weeks in October when you're doing your play. You know, yeah. Be like, oh, I listened to you and now I'm going to go back and hear these other two.
Yeah.
That I didn't know existed. And I think that relationship is key. And I think that's lovely that it's built that way. Because when I thought, it was very funny. I've watched you publish the books and create the audio plays and produce the audio play and get them out. And I thought it's just fantastic of a great model of building a relationship with multiple audiences and communities. And I
thank you.
You talked about, one of my questions is, you know, what got you to the next level? And I think you talked about your friend and your barter with the voiceover work, and that sounds like what kicked into another level, because that, along with your writing, allowed you to continuously, from the outside, I think everybody's like, I could work more, I could do this, but from the outside, looking like you're working pretty steadily, consistently. What do you carry? It's my question. What do you carry into the room today that maybe you didn't, besides the people pleasing part as an actor? But what do you think you carry into the room when you're, maybe even when you're starting this podcast? Not this one, but yours.
Yeah.
That, or creating an event at the Hard Hollywood, you know, what was it? Planet Hollywood. You're creating that project. What do you carry with you that maybe you didn't when you were first inviting people to your apartment to do 10-minute plays?
I think I'm letting myself do what feels like the next right thing for me. It's a tricky, it's so easy to get boxed in. People want to say, you do this thing. You are an author. You are a playwright. I think I used to worry that I would, it doesn't matter how I appear, right? That's one thing. It does not matter how I appear. But I used to worry I would appear scattered, that I didn't know what I wanted because I was letting myself do so many things. But what I've come to realize is that if I'm moment to moment asking myself, what would be fun? What would be exciting? What would be a challenge? And I'm doing that thing, I'm taking myself with me for everything I'm doing. So it is focused. It is consistent because it's me exploring, how do I want to tell a story next? And because I've allowed myself to maybe appear scattered at times to other people, when an idea lands, a story idea, now I can ask myself, well, what's the best way to do this? Is this a book? Is this a play? Is this an audio experience? Is this a live event where I want to get people in a room? And I think the result of that is I'm having a lot more fun and I feel expansion in my everyday. And I feel like I'm on some kind of adventure where I'm doing the thing. I'm a storyteller who's doing it in different ways. But if I had stopped and been like, I'm an actor, and wouldn't let myself try. Like I tell my kids all the time, they're 8, 5, and 3. So more my 8-year-old, that, sometimes when you grow up, adults are afraid to try. They're afraid to look like a beginner at something. And when you're a kid, everyone expects you to be a beginner. So soak it up and do it all the time. But as you get older, allow yourself. So I try to show them that their mom isn't afraid of that. I'm not afraid for you to look at me and be like, well, you're doing an event at Planet Holly. What the hell? Are you an event planner now? For this event, I am. I don't know. But and I'm learning skills with each project that I do. So I'm bringing more peace with myself these days of like, it's okay if you don't understand what I'm doing. I don't need to explain it. I'm just exploring, and if you want to play with me, I'd love you to join. That's the vibe.
That is the vibe, and I think that's great. Great to say. It's great to say it's okay. If you want to come with me, because I think the other one is also to say like, I also don't maybe know how to do this, but I know people have done it. So I, that's also what I see, which is, it's interesting to be like, I'm an actor, I'm an actor, I'm an actor, but also like, I'm a playwright. I'm a voice actor. I'm a, and then, oh, I'm a novelist. Oh, I'm a producer. Oh, can be whatever I, and I, what you said is, I think it's the artistic goal is actually to say like, oh, I want to create something and look, let me have the permission and freedom to create it in whatever form it's telling me it wants to be. And that's,
Well, and to your point about like not knowing how to do things before, if I ran into a not if when I ran into a problem, I used to internalize it a bit more and think, oh, I should know how to do this. Why don't I know how to do this? Maybe I shouldn't be doing this. And now I know that those problems aren't, they need a new word. They're not actually problems. They're like inevitables. Like you're gonna get to something that you don't know how to do, and it's gonna stretch you. You have to ask questions. You have to call in help. You've got to experiment. Things take longer than you think they're going to. And it's not a failing. It's the ride. That's part of it. And then the next time you do it, like for example, I did this big Kickstarter in the spring to celebrate the 3-year anniversary of the These Walls Can Talk series. And it was my first time I was putting all three plays into a hardback. Is this special edition hardback, and it was going to have gold edges. Like it was a collector's item, and I was utilizing the Kickstarter platform, and it was a big job. I spent a couple months studying the platform, figuring out how it would work. A lot of problems arose, a lot of inevitables arose, and it took longer than I wanted it to, but I figured it out, and it brought a lot of joy to me and to others that like backed the project. And now I'm planning another one. And I know what I learned this time. Like I had to learn things about the mail system, things that I didn't really care to learn about, but I had to make this successful. So now I know for this next one I do, I'm only going to do this kind of shipping. I'm only going to do this kind of packaging. I'm only and you it's on the job training. I just had to go through it. So
Yeah, constantly. I think, the next book will be called The Inevitables,
I like it. This only landed today during our conversation, but I think I'm going to continue using it. I like it.
I do too, because everything you said resonated with me, and the fact of like, I should know this. And then the next one is, I don't wanna. It's like, well, that's great. Then you won't. But
And that's fine too, but
wouldn't you rather do it? And the fact that, you have to figure something out like the mailing system, it's hilarious.
And then you can and probably should learn how to delegate. But I don't know about you. For me, I cannot delegate until I know what the process is. I don't know how to hand it off until I've learned how it works, if I want to be doing it, if it's better for someone else to be doing it. So I will delegate more next time, but I can't the first time.
No, I understand it because you're also not sure what you're asking them to do. Simply. And it's also good for me to learn there are things that other people are better at.
For sure. And probably sometimes they get more joy out of it than you. Something that is a slog for you, they're like, oh, I love doing those spreadsheets. You're like, have at it, kiddo.
What advice do you have when people are, do you think about starting out or building their own artistic career?
Well, I always think it's important, and it's hard to talk about this. It's important to notice who's in your life, who you spend a lot of time talking to, surrounded by. And it's hard to talk about because it's not like So say you have a friend who's always complaining, always, always, always complaining. You love that person. You want to be there for that person. You do not escort that person out of your life because they are not good for your career. It's not like that. But I think you need to understand the people who you should be bouncing ideas off of and the people that you shouldn't. Some people just their brains work differently. Their view of the world is different. So if you have a person who always wet blankets a situation or always devil's advocates it, maybe that's not the person you share your dream children with. Like I've learned who I go to with my ideas, and who I just kind of contain over here, and then they can see it when it's done. Because as much as I want to be the person that is kind of unshakable, if I come with you to you with lots of passion about something, and then you say all the reasons it's not going to work, something is diminished in me. Something is a little less excited. So that's my big thing is noticing who you're surrounded by, and know that you deserve to have people around you that are as excited about their lives as you are about yours, because then you can play together. Oh my God. When I first started, I really thought that there is a hierarchy, let's say, but I believed in it too much. I thought this person over here, I needed to get to them so they could hire me to do this thing. And then I saw it as this like visual up, up, up thing. And I've learned it's actually all horizontal. It's all you to my left, you to my right. What are you doing that's cool? What are you doing that's cool? I'm doing this thing. Can we hold hands and go together? Like that, oh, when I started like partnering and partying with the people to my left and to my right, things got so much more exciting, so much more fun. And I wasn't waiting anymore to do things because we were creating stuff together. You see that all the time in theater companies, right? Like, look at Labyrinth. People want to work with Labyrinth. And so they're just out of school and they want to get in that lab show. But that started 30 years ago with people looking to their left and to their right. And I think we need to know that making your own work is not the backup plan. The plan is not for someone else to select you. And if that doesn't happen, you do it yourself. I think you do it yourself. And then people will start to want to play with you and you rise up together. That's my manifesto, I think.
Thank you, Erin. That was just a great conversation. Glad that you're getting over the laryngitis. I'm grateful that we were able to find the time and talk. And I just love what you said about, not only to keep growing and, as we talked about earlier in the pod about the inevitables, but facing them and realizing like, yeah, there's going to be things that we don't know and to continue to grow. But I also think one of the things that you talked about is finding out what form a certain project wants to take for you, and that, maybe you're an actor, maybe you're a playwright, maybe this is a podcast, maybe it's an audio drama, maybe it's a book, maybe it's a song, who knows? And I just to be courageous enough to trust yourself and say, oh, that's what this is, I'm going to do that, and that we don't have to just do one thing. And I mentioned on the podcast that Erin was the first guest with Daniel Talbot, I think it was, when we did our first live bullpen session. And the reason I invited her then is because she was multi-hyphenated artist of an actor and playwright and now audio narrator of books. And I think it, and now she's just increased that. She was also a producer at the time. And, now she's producing on a large scale, as you had heard about the Hard Rock event in Las Vegas, which sounded incredible. And I just really appreciate that spirit and all of the work she's doing in different fields and realizing different genres and realizing that you can build the community and introduce your audience that knows you one way to an audience that knows you another way and merging those friends, and they'll have a better experience for knowing you as an artist that does multiple things. And it's true. It's funny. Made me think of the class that I teach with the three colleges, Center, Rhodes, and Suwanee, where I take them the plays. And, my only rule is they don't have to like the play, because I take them to eight different plays. I take them to institutions that I think are important or artists that are important. But, I've never seen the production before I book them, so I don't know the quality. And, it's interesting because and then they have to go out and play on their own. And one of them, we went to see Spain at Second Stage, and one of the characters sings opera, and the person said, "Oh, I really was excited by that part of the play. I'd never been to an opera, and now I might go to an opera to see if I like that." And I thought, that is not only our gift when we introduce our different communities to different things we do, but you give them an opportunity to experience something else, and it's just exciting to watch the students experience something else. And it's, you know, for some of them, they've never been to a play before this semester, so it is all new, and finding them to discover that, you know, they might like one a little less than another, but they might love something else, and that there's something in there for them. And it's incredibly rewarding. So thank you, Aaron. Great conversation. I also want to remind people before we go that Jen Holtman, casting director, is going to do an audition workshop with The Farm. And we are doing that Saturday, December 16th. And you can email me, patrick@thefarmtheater.org, if you want to participate. And love it. Have as many people as possible there. And I'm so glad that Jen is doing that, because going to talk about self-tape and going to talk about auditioning live, and also a chance to work out grad school auditions if people are doing that. And just really a great opportunity to talk about what is the best practices for you when you're in the room or in the Zoom. And that is it. And as always, share with us your projects. I'm happy to plug whatever you're doing and come see it. And thank you, Aaron Mellon. And with that, we're out.